Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, coming to you live from Nationals Park. If you're getting down to the ballpark, time for first pitch today. Come on by and say hello. We're in the left field concourse by Hank's Cocktail Counter, Caviar and Tiger Fork, and Hot Dogs and Fries, sections 106 and 107. Want to hear from you guys. Want to see what you're up to. The Nats and the Giants, a rubber match, matinee style. It is spring break for a bunch of kids in the
area, right? Yes.
So I would think there'd be a decent turnout today, particularly from folks within the city that don't have any school. Maybe bring the youngsters to the ballpark for a little Giants-Nats baseball game.
A lot of peeps are out of town, but if you're in town, you could do a lot worse than a nice spring day here at Nationals Park watching a couple lefties do battle.
Caps-Canes, game four tonight. Going to shift the series one way or the other. Either Washington's coming back to D.C. with a chance to put the finishing touches on Carolina on Saturday night in game four, or we're going to have a 2-2 brand new even series and a best of three beginning at home on Saturday night at 8 p.m. on 7th and F Streets. We will find out this evening. We'll get a full preview of that game coming up in just a few minutes. We were talking about the Redskins schedule. We'll get back into it in a second. Did you see that my Cleveland Browns, Danny? You know, I am a Cleveland Browns guy.
Cleveland Paulson, yes.
The NFL loves them almost as much as I do, granting the Browns four primetime games in 2019, three primetime games in the first 5 weeks of the season.
Because that's where the novelty is, man. Everyone wants to see Freddie Kitchens and the new-look Browns with Mayfield and Odell Beckham and the whole nine yards.
Who's more fun than that team on paper? I mean, really, honestly, when you think about personnel and talent, their backfield, they went and got Kareem Hunt. Now, he's not going to be available during that stretch of early season primetime games. But you throw him into the backfield with Nick Chubb, who's a stud. Duke Johnson's one of the more underappreciated backs in the league as a pass catcher. You mentioned Baker Mayfield, who everybody seems to have a strong feeling about one way or the other, coming off of a phenomenal rookie season. You've got Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, who makes as many lights out, silly, ridiculous catches as anyone in the league not named Beckham. They've got a great tight end in David Njoku. They've got a burner in Antonio Callaway. All over the field, offensively, they're fun, they're exciting, and they are one of the better, kind of faster defenses in the league over the last couple years as well, with a world eater in Myles Garrett leading the way up front.
He's really good. The smart guys at ESPN, the guy, I'm not talking about the Bloviators, the Stephen A. Smiths of the world, but the people that actually study stuff here, they're kind of panel of football experts. A number of them, when they were asked, what's your easiest call in win totals? Meaning you look at now post-free agency, pre-draft, but the over-under for the Colts is, say, 9.5 or 8.5, whatever it is. Some guys said, hey, that's
so
easy call. It's going to be
over. Total,
yeah,
saying?
Like, what's the one you feel the best about? A number of guys said under 9 wins for the Browns. Because they're basically like the reality doesn't match the excitement level because they've got headliners, but they're not quite there yet.
But here's where I disagree with that. The only way I would endorse that is if we find out Freddie Kitchens is Jim Zorn, right? If he just doesn't belong and has no business being a head coach and he's a goofball who's ill-prepared, that would be one thing. He called plays. Zorn never did that.
Yep.
And by all accounts, was very popular with players in that locker room. So that gives him, I think, a leg up on not being a joke at the least. But that division's not really good. Pittsburgh opens the season with New England. I do think the Steelers will be better, but they do not have Le'Veon Bell, who was obviously not around last year either for different reasons. Antonio Brown, who's been the best receiver in the National Football League statistically over the last 5 years for them, is gone as well. That makes life a little bit more difficult for Ben Roethlisberger. Juju Smith-Schuster, and I'm Team Juju all the way here, I want the guy to thrive. He's about to find out. It's a whole lot different when you're the marked man who everyone's trying to take away and bracketing safety coverage to and at times doubling than getting the seconds when Antonio Brown's getting all that attention. I think they're in for a little bit of a rude awakening early this season offensively, perhaps. James Conner, very good. Roethlisberger going to make the Hall of Fame. I'm not sitting here telling you they're 7-19.
Yeah, they were 9-6-1 with more turmoil than anybody ever last year.
And so I bet on 10, maybe 11 wins. I think they make the playoffs. But I am not a believer in the Ravens. I got to see a lot more from Lamar Jackson as a passer. They had a bad offseason defensively. They lost a lot.
Yep.
So I think they take a step back. And the Cincinnati Bengals just hired a new head coach who's 6 years old.
I think they're going to stink.
I think born at Alexandria Inova Hospital like in 2013 or something like that. They're not any good. The Browns are going to be able, with six games in their own division, I would think, to go 4-2 right there, right? They'll split with Pittsburgh, they'll sweep Cincinnati, and they'll take at least one game from Baltimore.
You would think. But again, I know. I think it's a little too early to crown them. They made a major improvement to get to basically 500, 7-8-1. Ties stink. They're the worst. Everyone knows that they're the worst, and they should eliminate them from the sport. But to make that next leap now with teams like the Rams and Seattle, New England on their schedule, not the easiest thing to do. I think they'll be better. I think they'll be good. I want a full year of Mayfield and a real adult offense, not what Hugh Jackson was running, that nonsense that held everybody back for the first few weeks, and he should never have had the job. From the previous year, but whatever. I'm excited to watch them, too, because of the intrigue, but I think it's still a little too early for them to be crowned. But I would bet the over in terms of if it was eight wins. I think they're right at nine, in terms of this group, because I think that division, I think Baltimore is going to do what they do, which is play pretty good defense, run the stupid ball,
like
and squeeze
me
out a win. I think Pittsburgh will be back.
You think that they have a chance to be a wild card team and make the playoffs?
Yes, I do. I think they've got a chance at that. That's what they're fighting for.
And how fun would that be? How good would that be for the NFL?
Dude, I'd enjoy that.
If the Cleveland Browns were a playoff team. Like remember when Kelly Holcomb was slinging the ball around in the snow many
years
ago?
Never forget.
When they had one pretty good season. Then there was that year Braylon Edwards caught 17 touchdowns. I think their quarterback was Derek Anderson. And they accidentally got good for about 3 months. And then it all came crashing down.
It all came crashing down.
Couple of notes on the early season schedule for the Skins. They open at the Eagles in week one. They're opening on the road consecutive seasons, first time since 08-09. And you mentioned back-to-back division games, start of the year, week two against the Dallas Cowboys. They have not played two straight NFC East games over the first two games of a season since 1999. That was a division championship year where Brad Johnson threw for 4,005 yards and Steven Davis ran for 1,456, if memory serves. But that season for the Redskins doesn't matter anymore. And what does is those two matchups are against the two best teams in your division. You're not playing two Eastern Division teams where one is the Giants. You're playing the Eagles, favored to win the thing, and the Cowboys, who won it last year, two playoff teams. Then everything will calm down. You go out of the division, you'll get a stinker. Wait, I'm being told you play a 12-win Bears team on national TV, at home, on Monday Night Football, your only home Monday Nighter of the season. Those always go very well.
So you know what we do, and by the way, we should always root for no primetime games for the Redskins, and they've only got two this year, which is good. One of them is the mandatory Thursday night game. Regarding the Cowboys, you know how it takes a couple years to update your file about what a team is? Like, for example, we kept saying, dude, the Giants are going to be better. The Giants are going to be better, even while all the evidence may have been pointing to the contrary, and they slowly slipped into whatever this is that they are now, just a tire fire with a bad general manager. Look at Dallas. We think of Dallas as, they're destined to be 8-8. They're the quintessential 8-8 team. Do you realize they've won 9 or more games for the last 5 seasons? They've won double-digit games 3 of the last 5 seasons? They've kind of graduated. Now, I think it's all going to come crashing down when they've got to pay Dak Prescott. And next thing you know, you got to make more sacrifices here. But I think they still have that window right now where they can be pretty good. And you know how their bread's buttered? It's Ezekiel Elliott and Tank Lawrence getting after the quarterback and Dak Prescott converting a few third downs. They're going to be formidable. I still think Philly wins this division, but Dallas, they're not pushovers.
If you're just joining us on Grant and Danny, the big news of the day, Matt Ioannidis, who had 7.5 sacks for the Redskins last year, a fifth-round pick who has turned himself into a really good defensive end, has signed a 3-year extension to stay with Washington after this year when he would have become a free agent. Ioannidis paired with Daron Payne, a first-round pick in 2018, and Jonathan Allen, the team's first-round pick in 2017, helps to form a trio and a triumvirate of guys who can collapse the pocket and be, you know, pushing presences defensively up front, moving offensive linemen into the backfield. This is what it's supposed to look like. I cannot commend the Redskins enough. We bash them a lot. We laugh at them a lot when they do silly things, and we should. I mean, that's frankly our job, right? When they do well, say it. When they do poorly, be fair and accurate. This is great. They found a guy in the fifth round that shouldn't have been available in the fifth round. They've turned him into a better player than most of the teams around the league thought he was ever going to be, and they did that with development and coaching. Job well done. And now they extended the guy before they had to. This is a 3-for-3, boxes being checked, slam dunk.
Everything about it's good. I mean, when it's one of those, like, you know, you always hear about those stories, right, where everybody showed up at the one high school to see the one player, and everyone kept noticing this other player. At Temple, all the scouts are there to see Hassan Reddick. That was the first rounder. That was the superstar. That was the can't-miss guy. Just part of the rank and file at Temple, for goodness sakes, Matt Ioannidis. Did not look like a guy that was going to be long for this league during his rookie year. That all changed, turned himself into a bona fide quality stud of an NFL player. And I think there's more in the tank, especially as he's going to get singled up by guards all over the place. And I think he's got a chance to wreak some havoc. I'm a Matt Ioannidis guy. Good on the Redskins here.
15 minutes from now, your opportunity to get educated on Game 4, Caps and Canes. We will do that at 11:30. But next, your Nationals stock report. And at the start of next segment, in just a handful of minutes, we are giving away tickets to see the Nats and the Padres coming up later this month at Nationals Park. You got to keep listening to Grant and Danny. Bottom of the hour at 11:30 as we welcome you back on Grant and Danny. Chris Russell, our Caps insider, who's been at the Capitals training facility for all their practices and at their arena for all their home games throughout the playoffs, will join us. We will discuss with Chris Game 4 tonight. Little note for you, Danny. Head coach Rod Brindamore of the Carolina Hurricanes did tell reporters earlier today that Andrei Svechnikov, the 19-year-old Alex Ovechkin knocked out, has not yet been cleared to return to hockey activities as of this morning. Of course, we knew he wasn't going to play in Game 4. There is no update beyond that. But to this point, he has not been cleared. I said this a few days ago, and I'm going to stick with this. I really believe we could have seen the end of Svechnikov in this series, don't you think?
I mean, I have no medical opinion that's worthwhile from afar, but that didn't look good to me. So that's as far as I'd go with that, is that no shock, obviously, that he's not playing tonight. I would be stunned if he's available for Saturday and really start to get into is it game 6 or 7, or he might be able to come back. To me, it's a long road. And that stinks. Again, I hate that. I hate that that's the case, that a guy, you know, is concussed and working back from that. But good on the league for finally taking that stuff seriously.
Caller number 10 right now at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. If you can tell Sean who hit the fourth and final home run that the Nationals hit last night, they had four of them, you're going to win a pair of tickets to see the Nats take on the Padres April 26th at Nats Park. 1067 The Fan and PenFed Credit Union are taking you out to the ballgame all season long, courtesy of PenFed Credit Union. Details at thefandc.com/contest. By the way, I saw this on a sign walking into the ballpark today.
You saw a sign and opened up your eyes.
That's a Friday night game. I saw the sign. That is also a fireworks game.
Oh, hello.
So if you win tickets right now to that game, you'll get a little fireworks show as well.
100 points control the board. Who sang that song, I Saw the Sign?
Ace of Base.
That is correct. You have control of the board. You're not going to beat that guy from Jeopardy right now that's winning $120,000 every time he goes out there, by the way.
I can't tell if he is one of the smartest Jeopardy contestants ever or just the most savvy when it comes to what to bid and bet, because he's a great sports gambler.
I think it's that, too. I think it's Holzhauer. I don't know how to say his name. If you're not privy to this, this is the new Ken Jennings, but he's got more money in 10 days than Ken Jennings won in 21 days.
Right.
He's gone into Final Jeopardy with the highest amount that anyone's ever won and then
doubled
it at times. Nobody's ever had $60,000 in Final Jeopardy going into it. He's had that, and then he's doubled it multiple times. He's broken his own record twice within a week.
Yeah, he is the number one, number two, number three, and I think number five
yes.
all-time winner in per-show money at this point.
Yes.
And he's been on for 5 days or something.
It's 10 shows now. It's
preposterous.
10 for 10. He had, and again, we're over talking about this, but I'm obsessed with it. He had a game, okay, yesterday where he got 41 answers correct with zero incorrect responses.
How many questions were there overall? Like 50?
So whatever that is. So it's,
I mean, do the other two Ham and Eggers 20, even
yeah.
get to buzz in? Or
so I guess there's 50
everything?
Total questions, right? Plus Final Jeopardy. So I guess 51 total. So he didn't answer 10 questions. The previous record was believed to have been 35 correct with zero incorrect.
I believe, and I have nothing to base this on, but I know my buddy was on something. Have you ever heard of the show called Sports Jeopardy?
Is that the one where they did with the big fat guy on ESPN?
No, this was Dan Patrick knockoff of Jeopardy. It was like on Hulu or some random
app. Yes, so it wasn't like beat the Schlepp or the Schwab. That's the one. Thank you.
Okay. You're thinking of Stump the Schwab. This was Sports Jeopardy with Dan Patrick. But my buddy, who's a weird guy who loves like the most random sports ever, and if you call him at like 2 in the morning tonight, he'll be watching like some Australian rules cricket match or something. He wanted to go on that show, so he got his way onto the show. And he actually like took time to try to master how the clicker works so that he knew exactly when to buzz in. Because if you buzz in too early, it's not turned on and you can't actually get through yet. So if you don't wait long enough into the question and you're just hitting the button, it doesn't actually register to give you control of the board, so to speak.
Okay.
So he had to time up when you can hit. Now, one of the other strategies, you hit it over and over and over and over and over.
And you're repeated.
The problem with that is, what if in that split second when your thumb's not on the button, someone buzzes in? So you're best off, it's like, think playing a video game when you're trying to get off to a quick start and you're trying to get your car going without screeching tires or something. You have to time the controller just right when the gun sounds.
Yep.
Basically, that is Jeopardy. And I think that this guy that we're talking about winning all this money, I think he has mastered whatever algorithm there is to get buzzed in at exactly the right time.
So he's the quickest buzzer. He's also the savviest better. So he basically goes, whatever, the Daily Double. And he's like, yeah, I'm doubling it every time.
He knows every answer also.
Yeah, that's the key, by the way. I could be the best at buzzing. I ain't winning that show.
I could wager all my money every time. Right. I'm not doubling it if I don't always know the answer.
He's
making Jeopardy watchable.
Yeah, so you know the movie The Predator, right?
Familiar.
From back in the day where Schwarzenegger, what happened to you, Dylan? Used to be someone I could trust. Like, The Predator only would challenge himself against other like worthwhile opponents, like military guys that were carrying guns, and that's what he wanted. That was the sport. This is like the Predator going through like our station, where like nobody's capable of defending themselves. We're all fat and out of shape and gross. Like, he is dominating to such a degree, it just sucks if you go through the contestant
pool. Well, can you imagine?
And then you get that guy.
Yeah, imagine being on the show tonight.
Yeah,
you're going up against Babe Ruth.
It's UNLV in '91.
A quick Nats stock report. Couple of guys I want to call attention to, if you don't mind. Anthony Rendon is hit safely in a career
stock
best.
Stock report up.
Thank you very much, Tommy. Thank you, Tom.
15 games. He is 24 for 58. He's batting .414 during this 15-game hitting streak with 18 RBI. In that time, he has scored 19 runs over 15 games. Longest current streak in Major League Baseball this season. Started April 2nd. Going to April 30, recorded at least an extra base hit in 10 consecutive games, which is staggering. That matched the longest streak in Major League Baseball over the last 2.5 seasons. Francisco Lindor and Alex Bregman also did it. He has been unbelievable. Then there's Adam Eaton at the top of the order.
Yeah.
Quality at bats and waiting every time you see him. Last night, Eaton singled in the second and the fifth innings. Eaton's fourth straight multi-hit game. He's two games shy of a career best, 6 consecutive games. He did that way back in 2015. But he's reached base safely in 14 of his last 16. And in those 16 games, he's got 22 hits. So he's now among National League outfielders in leading the categories such as on-base percentage top 10, batting average top 10 as well. Adam Eaton has been really good.
His outs yesterday, by the way, were barreled shots to left center that were tracked down. He is swinging the bat well. Nobody's swinging the bat better probably in the world than Howie Kendrick at this point. Two more hits last night, including a homer. I don't know how you keep him out of the lineup. I understand that long-term, Brian Dozier, you know, over the course of regular season, will probably provide more value and just in terms of his power, the homers he's going to hit, the extra base hits, etc. But Howie Kendrick is so locked in, every time he swings the bat, it's a line shot somewhere. He's raking. He is a juggernaut at this point, batting an even 500. 500. 500 over his last. Nope. This season, Howie Kendrick batting 500.
Well, it's only
500.
Been 6 at-bats, right?
No, sir. Howie Kendrick is spanking baseballs like they were very, very naughty.
You got to play him. And I would say the same about Matt Adams at first base, who's homered in two straight games. Ride the hot hand. When you're an offense without Trey Turner that is trying to figure out how you're going to create run-scoring opportunities, and you've got a first baseman with big-time power from the left side, you got to get him into your lineup.
Hit.
When someone's batting 500, that's a gift sent from baseball heaven. Accept that gift. Please unwrap it and enjoy it. Will the Caps give you a gift tonight with a Game 4 win over the Hurricanes? We'll break down the matchup next with our buddy Chris Russell right here on The Fan. Grant and Danny live from Nationals Park. Welcome back on 106.7 The Fan. Much appreciate you listening as always. If you're coming to the ballgame, come say hello. We're in the left field concourse, sections 106 and 107. It is Thursday, which means a couple things. Matinee baseball against the Giants. You can hear the game on The Fan at 105. We've got 1 hour left, and then Charlie and Dave come by with pregame at 12:30. We are going to be giving away a pair of general admission tickets to the Redskins draft party at the Anthem coming up at 12:18. So if you want to get into the Anthem to meet and greet with some of the Redskins, watch some live performances, see all the analysis of the draft picks throughout the night on stage, you got to be listening at 12:18. Right now, though, let's talk some Caps, presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online at PVIPVI.com today. Chris Russell is our Caps insider. He's on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Chris, should Caps fans be concerned about Game 4 after the disaster that Game 3 was?
Yeah, absolutely, because I didn't think they were absolutely and clearly the best team in Games 1 and 2, even though they got off the hot starts in both and then survived and hung on and won, despite having to go to overtime on Saturday afternoon with Brooks Orpik's game winner, Grant. And I would just say this. I mean, clearly we know they were the better team for about 5 minutes on Monday night, dominated after about the 5 or 6 minute mark of the first period from pretty much the first goal on, and it wasn't even close. And again, I think you could make a strong argument that Carolina bad starts in games one and two were the better team after those two bad starts. Now those count, so you can't say that they've been the better team conclusively, but I can make that argument that they've been the better team for much more of this series than the Capitals. So yes, you should be very concerned, in my opinion.
Russell, what do you make of the changes that that Todd Reardon's making? There's two schools of thought, real quick. One is, you're the better team. You shouldn't be changing anything that you do. Dance with what brought you, what got you all over 100 points and home ice advantage. The other is just kind of what you just talked about. Carolina's had the better of play an awful lot in this series, and we're trying to exploit what we do better here or can get better matchups. Do you view it as kind of panic moves, or do you view it as, no, these are smart and savvy changes, and it'll exploit some things for the Capitals?
Yeah, I don't view it as a panic. I mean, I get some of them. I don't mind it. Like, personally, to me, the one move that he didn't make that I would have made, and I don't know if you guys agree with me, it's, I would have liked to have seen Kuznetsov reunited with Wilson and Ovechkin. I think they need more out of Evgeny Kuznetsov. I know he had the game-winning assist. I know he had another pretty assist in game one. He's been concerned with his matchup defensively, and he's done a pretty decent job against Sebastian Aho, so I get it. But to me, that's the one move that I would have liked him to see. I think we would all agree Siegenthaler, a great move on defense instead of Christian Juice. The forward pairings, so I get Wilson with Kuznetsov, so that's good, and hopefully Verana, that can ignite him a little bit. I think you help out your bottom six a little bit by getting Burakovsky back with more skilled players in Eller and Connolly, even though he had some success on the fourth line. And I am intrigued to see what Oshie can do with the top line. So I actually think these are overall pretty good moves. Again, I would have made a move with Kuznetsov. That's just me. I'm not saying that I know more than Todd Reardon, but that's the only move that he didn't make that I could see. Maybe you could have made.
What's wrong with the power play? They're 0 for 10 since a couple minutes into game one.
Yeah, a lot of things. One, Carolina has taken away time and space. If you look at one of their kills on Monday night, I think it was the third penalty, they were in much better position. They were hunting, they were pecking, they were closing the window and the space that they left open in game one, which they allowed the two first power play goals. Guys, I just got done charting this. I've been charting the power play success or failure throughout the series. We, again, know they were 2 for 2 to start, and we know they're 0 of 10. They didn't have a shot on goal, the Capitals, in three of the four power play opportunities on Monday night. And that makes six of the last 10 power play opportunities where they have not had a shot on goal the entire power play. That's absurd. I'm sorry. They are missing the net. We talked about this, the three of us, before this series. One of the keys was that they were the fourth most missed shot team in the NHL. They miss shots way too often for a team that preaches about quality over quantity. Get more shots at the net, get more in traffic, crash the net, create some confusion. A bunch of Carolina's goals in this series have come off of screens where Braden Holtby can't see. The Capitals are not hitting the net, and they're not creating enough traffic and havoc in front, and they've got to do something about Carolina's adjustment to take away time and space.
Chris Russell with us here on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. To me, this series has been about Carolina's forecheck. And I know we're talking about, like, Carolina's up. The Caps are up 2-1 here. That loss is really sticking with a lot of people, myself included, from the other night. But to me, if you can exploit Carolina's overcommitment to the forecheck, you get odd man rushes and they'll back off. If you don't, it's more of what we saw the other night, Russell. How do they do that? How do they get the puck out of their own zone without some of the Benny Hill music playing?
You know, it's a good point, Danny. The thing that I guess I would go to is you need to figure out a way how to shoot a guy up the center of the ice for those stretch passes. If you're going to be in your own defensive zone to get it out while they're forechecking in Carolina's offensive zone, that's one way to do it. Because it doesn't seem like the Capitals are very good at clearing the puck along the boards, quite honestly, from their own defensive zone. They've struggled with that as well in this series and at times throughout the regular season. So I think from your own zone, the stretch pass is maybe trying to dial that up a little bit. There's been times this year where they've been really, really good, and there's been times in this series, think back to early in game, one, third period, where they had a couple of breakaways on that type of thing. Maybe that can free up some things. And then I think when you're getting into the neutral zone and trying to penetrate their defensive zone, meaning the Canes' defensive zone, I'm a big dump and chase Mike Vogel style kind of guy. I'm a big go after the puck in the corner south of the goal line and try and again create a turnover by pressure. I've seen a couple of examples of that. I haven't seen enough of it.
Our guest is Chris Russell. You know the voice. You hear him on 106.7 The Fan, and you will see his Capitals content on thefandc.com throughout these playoffs. If the Caps win, if the Caps lose, give us a thought on what it would look like.
I think if the Caps win, to me, I'll just say this. Kuznetsov, I know I talked about him already. I think he's got to get a marker and become playoff Kuzi. Again, he hasn't been bad in this series. He just hasn't been good enough. That's number one. I think if you get a goal somehow, some way from the fourth line, maybe with Boyd and his speed to match Dowd and his kind of ability to deflect pucks in front and create a little bit of havoc, maybe that helps. And then the other thing that we probably should talk about is, you know, I think Braden Holtby has been good in this series. He blamed himself for the two goals in game one that he allowed. He called them basically soft goals. And the Aho goal the other day in game two, where he didn't hug the post, he's got to be better. I know he's been screened. I know he hasn't had some good clean looks. But Braden Holtby's got to be what Braden Holtby was, for the most part, during the Stanley Cup playoff run last year, where at times he was absolutely stone-cold, assassin-like, and brilliant.
That's what you were during the Stanley Cup run, Russell. You were stone-cold, brilliant-like, assassin. You're
right,
our guy.
Right.
Thank you, buddy.
And if they lose, real quickly, not enough shots on goal and too many stupid penalties, please stay out of the penalty box. Please stop retaliating. Please stop taking interference penalties and play a clean game.
Chris Russell, boys and girls, thank you as always.
Thanks, guys.
Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We're live at Nationals Park where the Nats are playing the Giants. Winner of today's game wins a series 2 out of 3. We'll get you a preview, plus Charlie and Dave to come your way next hour at 12:30. Remember, first pitch set for 105. We've got those tickets to the Redskins draft party at 12:18. Danny, Josh Rosen getting no love from the Cardinals. I'll explain next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Fell Stats. Welcome back. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. The Redskins have the easiest strength of schedule, the most fortuitous schedule in football based on last year's results. Now, that and a couple bucks is going to get you a pack of gum. Doesn't really mean a whole lot, Danny. But the Redskins with a 469 winning percentage against based on the 2018 results. Easiest in football. You wonder, how's that possible? Well, they play the Giants twice, which helps.
Yep.
And they play the AFC East, where the Dolphins, the Jets, the Bills were not particularly good. Not coincidentally, the Patriots have the second easiest schedule in the league this year, despite being Super Bowl champions. You'd expect it from a team like the Redskins with a last-place schedule, not from the Pats. Again, I don't think any of that actually matters because teams improve and are different year to year, but I'd rather have the softest schedule going into the year than the hardest.
Right, if you're doing a graph by point of comparison. And again, guys go from worst to first. There's parity in this league. Everybody's susceptible to it with the exception of the Patriots and then maybe a couple teams down at the bottom of the sport who can't seem to get right ever no matter what. But again, this is an 8-8 league where the overwhelming majority of the teams in the league are in that bucket, and you get a break or two, either, you know, a holding call gets called or it doesn't, a ball goes up the upright or it doesn't. This is really razor thin with a couple exceptions, and the Patriots are that exception. They get to take advantage, stockpile wins against the division where Buffalo made the playoffs two seasons ago for the first time in a millennium, it seems like. Miami's actively tanking and rebuilding. The Jets are 4-12. They'll be better, but dubious honor to be better than 4-12. So, yeah, all that makes sense to me.
Did you see the story before we get to the double play that Rob Gronkowski left a dent, basically the size of a baseball maybe, in the Lombardi Trophy?
What?
So here's your story. ESPN.com from Foxborough. The Patriots' most recent Vince Lombardi Trophy, Super Bowl 53, has a baseball-sized dent in it courtesy of retired tight end Rob Gronkowski. The team's website posted video of the often playful Gronkowski using the trophy as a bat before an on-field appearance at the Boston Red Sox home opener on April 9th. Apparently, Gronk doing Gronk things was kind of swinging the trophy around as if he was David Ortiz several years ago with the bat. He was pulling, you know, a J.D. Martinez. And I don't know what he hit or if he actually hit a ball or what he did, but he dented the Lombardi Trophy. Is that not the most Gronk thing you've ever heard?
Of course that's what he did. Like, of course he did. He is the bull in a china shop at all times. Like, I don't know that if I was an insurance company, I don't know that I'd insure that guy.
How could you?
Like, I think I would ask for, like, the Ruben Pfeffer sort of paradigm that he did.
Life risk management.
Life risk management. There's no way that guy would fit. He wants to spike everything. Oh, is that a crystal chalice? He'll spike that after a night of oat sodas. That dude is just too big to play. That's how I think of it. You have that friend who, like, when you guys are wrestling around and hanging out, who hits you too hard? He's that guy times a million among NFL players. He's just too big.
He goes one step too far every time.
Yes.
You're slap boxing. He throws a punch that breaks your nose. You're pushing and shoving back and forth. He tackles you to the ground and you end up breaking a finger.
It's like when you see your uncle, he's like, oh, come here, buddy. Let me give you a couple of 1-2s in the stomach.
He doesn't
breaks
know
your
how
rib.
Strong he yeah. is. He slams the door and he breaks something that falls down off the wall. That's Gronk. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Double play. The double play.
Via Bloomberg News, the worst dudes ever. Not Bloomberg News, but these jackasses from the Fire Festival. So this is from the news story. 2 years after the Fire Festival failed, it continues to make waves. Hulu and Netflix may face subpoenas over their documentaries about the festival. Gregory Messer, the Chapter 7 trustee for the Fire Festival estate, sought the subpoenas in a filing Tuesday in bankruptcy court. He asked the judge to require Hulu and Netflix to show whether they paid for footage that should have been deemed an asset of the company. Here is the big translation. They're so broke, they still owe people lots of money. The organizer, that jackass, is in prison still, Billy McFarlane, and they're trying to find a way to fund this stuff. So they're going to go after the people that exposed them and try to get some payments out of it, or at least settle out of court to pay off some of their expenses. I hate these people. I'm obsessed with it. I want all the F. Jerry guys, the media company that pumped this non-existent festival where people were like sleeping in sewage and on tents and an island that was not a nice thing. The lies, the fraudulence, the non-accountability. I want them to lose every step of the way, Graham.
I think that's fair, but hate's such a strong word, Danny. How about you don't like them?
Hate.
I don't think you hate them.
I do.
You have a visceral hate in your heart for them?
This is what I hate this entire class of person who until they were caught, continually skating through, scamming people.
Oh, and they would have kept doing it.
And the initial credit card that this guy designed that boobs bought into, Instagram influencers and the like, that alleged all these benefits. None of these things existed. It was a pyramid scheme. Just skating through life, taking advantage of the worst parts of our society. I want these people exposed and vilified and hated so that we change, so that we get better as a people. Fewer people with CBD pens and those other stupid Juul products or whatever not Juul stupid. You don't talk about it. Looks various things that are like Instagram hashtag ad people. I want them to go away forever.
I like it. I like where your head's at. It is time for my double play.
Double play. The double play.
And this isn't particularly political as much as it is, I think, calling attention to something that I think is a job well done. The governor of Maryland is Larry Hogan. Everybody seems to like him a whole lot. He does a pretty good job by most accounts. He has signed the resolutions that will designate June 28th as Freedom of the Press Day in Maryland to memorialize the five lives lost on June 28th, 2018, in the shooting, you'll remember, in Annapolis at the Capital Gazette newsroom that was such a traumatizing, awful, terrible thing that happened not far from where we sit right now. Several staff members of the paper were with Larry Hogan today in Maryland as he signed that resolution, which I thought was really neat. But June 28th will go down as Freedom of the Press Day in Maryland, and in a time where the press is not the most popular that it has ever been necessarily. I think that's pretty cool that not only did he call attention to that, but I think it is important that we honor the memory of people that are lost, or otherwise sometimes we just kind of forget that things happen.
It's very easy to go about your business again.
When's the last time, and I hate to put it this bluntly, but you thought about those five folks that died in that newsroom?
It's been a long time.
I haven't thought about that in months. I saw this story today, and the first thing I thought was, wow, we're coming up on a year. What an incredibly awful thing. If not for that day now, every year being remembered for that, I think it just kind of comes and it goes. We don't learn from it. We don't think about it. So, Larry Hogan, I like what you did there. The Beltway Blitz at noon is next. Teams in town you care the most about. We're going to be jam-packed in 3D. We've got about 40 minutes of show left, and then Charlie and Dave take over with pregame. Nats baseball today at 1:05. 20 minutes from now, your chance to win tickets to the Skins Draft Party at the Anthem. One of the best prizes we're giving away this week. Could be yours. You got to listen. Noon is in the rearview mirror, and that means it is time for your Beltway Blitz, covering the teams in town you care the most about. And why don't we get started live at Nationals Park ahead of Game 3 with the Giants with our buddy Craig Heist.
Nationals.
15 minutes from now, your chance to win Skins tickets to their draft party at the Anthem. Craig Heist knows a thing or two about the Washington Redskins.
And but parties.
The partier, Craig Heist,
That's
is what
right.
we call him.
Okay.
Have you thrown some house parties lately, Heisty?
Okay. No house parties, but, you know, we get out occasionally.
Yeah, you get after it from time to time. Let's start with the Nationals, though. Patrick Corbin's fourth start today. So far, he's gone 6 innings, 2 runs against the Mets. 6 innings, 3 runs against the Mets. 7 innings, 1 run with 11 strikeouts against the Pirates. He's been magnificent.
Well, you said give me 6 innings and 2 runs today, and you'll take it. I'll say give me 7 and make the bullpen less of an issue. And I think the Nationals wind up winning this series if that happens.
The bullpen is not good. We all know that. But I do think the bullpen has improved some from the beginning of the year.
And last night, Wander Suero was big because he went an inning and 2/3. All 5 batters he faced, he retired. 2 strikeouts along the way. And if you go back to the 6th inning, Matt Grace gets that last out. Now, granted, Pablo Sandoval sent Victor Robles out to the warning track for that ball. But nonetheless, you know, Austin Williams gets the final out of the 8th inning, and in the 9th, he faces 4 batters and can't get anybody out.
So my worry, besides the ineffectiveness that we've seen from the majority of the guys, okay, mm-hmm. Doolittle notwithstanding, is you end up overusing guys. You end up getting guys up and burning them, and then you get 2 days in a row, 3 out of 4, sometimes 3 straight. Then the injuries happen. Then you're even worse off, Heisty.
Right, and you can't have that happen, and Doolittle may not be available today. We'll see. Davey Martinez says he's going to play it by ear. But if he's available today, I guarantee he's not going to be available tomorrow in Miami. So we'll wait and see.
When you look at this lineup, it's not consistently night in and night out going to go out there and hammer out 9 hits and 6 runs. Very few in baseball have that potential. But it's been boom or bust. And when they drive the ball, they score last night 4 homers. How would you describe Sans Turner what this group can be for the next few weeks?
I think it can be very good. I coming into this week, they were 3rd in all of baseball in runs scored. 6.8 or 9, whatever it was. There were only 2-3 teams behind ahead of them. So from that standpoint, I don't think there's a problem offensively a whole lot. Or do they miss Trey Turner? Absolutely.
Of course, anybody would.
At the top of that lineup. But now that Howie Kendrick is healthy, you can spell Dozier, and Dozier's off to a tough start. He had a hit last night late in the game, but he's hitting 152. That can't continue. He's got to get it going, but Howie's a good person to put in there if Dozier's not hitting.
How should this go forward? I mean, listen, it's fine now. You're trying to get the sea legs under Dozier. Same thing with Ryan Zimmerman. But right now, the way Howie Kendrick is smashing the baseball, even 500, how do you keep him out of the lineup? And, you know, Matt Adams back-to-back games with a homer. It's not an easy position to be in. It's awkward. You also don't have the luxury of just kind of letting guys figure it out in this division.
It was funny because Grant tweeted something the other night saying about Matt Adams, we should probably see him a little bit more against right-handed pitching. How that plays itself out over the next couple of weeks, we'll see. But, Davey has said over and over and over again, Ryan Zimmerman's your first baseman. We're going to give him days off here and there to keep him healthy. So, going forward, his bat, Matt Adams coming off the bench last time. I mean, he hit the home run the other night, had a home run last night. He's tough to keep out of the lineup.
How do you feel about the NL East? I mean, it's already become what we all expected it would by the end of the year, which is, you look at the standings, and every day there's a battle for first with 3 teams and 4 teams that seem to be pretty good.
I like the NL East from this standpoint. The first 4 teams, I think, are going to just beat each other up. 90 wins may win this division this year. I really do believe that. I think the Nationals have the best starting pitching of anybody collectively. Bullpen's obviously a mess. That's got to get straightened out. I still think the Phillies, for as good as their lineup is, their pitching is still a question mark for me. The Mets have to stay healthy. The Braves are who they are. I mean, they won the division last year. Are they the same team? Not quite so sure. Their starters are a little bit in flux. So we'll see. But I still like the Nationals' chances to win this division.
Nice to thank you, buddy. Enjoy the day.
All right.
Let's talk some Redskins, please, Tommy.
Redskins.
Greg Hoffman will talk Redskins with us. It's because he covers the Redskins for this radio station you're listening to right now. Greg, Matt Ioannidis extension, what do we know?
3-year deal, close to $22 million and maybe another $3 million or so in incentives. And this is a massive, massive deal for them to get done now. This is a player who's been incredibly productive. And it's kind of amazing to think about his story because, remember, He didn't make the opening day roster in his rookie year. Anybody could have gotten him. Instead, he clears waivers. They get him on the practice squad. He has a bad rookie year, but comes back in year two. Is awesome. Again, awesome in year three. And you started to wonder with Payne and Allen, the first-round picks in tow, and a couple of the other guys they drafted, like, are they going to be able to afford to keep Matt Ioannidis? Now that never becomes a question. He never gets to free agency. And they get him on a deal that is, I would say, good for both sides, a reasonable number, but something where a fifth-round pick is getting paid a significant chunk of change over the next couple of years.
Sean, grab his phone and see if we can get him on a line that sounds a little bit better, because I want to talk to Craig, but I don't want to listen to Craig going, blah, 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 whatever that
was.
Is that
one of those things where he has to say over on the walkie-talkie? He didn't say over, so I didn't know if it was over
or not. He forgot the over. But I think his breakdown was correct, and he brings up a point that you and I hadn't gotten to earlier, which was, as great a job as the Redskins did evaluating him, drafting him, developing him, turning him into what he became, they did waive him at one point. Now,
I forgot, to be honest with you.
People will be cynical about that and say they tried to get rid of him, they cut him, and that's just not the case. He's a fifth-round pick. He hadn't really showed much at the time. All around the league, that's what happens. You waive players very regularly that you know you can get onto your practice squad because they haven't shown much. When teams have had four rounds to draft a player and they haven't, means they don't think that highly of a guy. So he didn't show a lot in the preseason. Generally, they're not going to make their 53-man roster over someone like them that is in their camp that they have invested time and energy in the offseason program and some money into. Craig joins us again on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline as we continue the Beltway Blitz. What was your reaction to the schedule? Look, I'm not a big fan of carrying over year to year, but for what it's worth, the Redskins have the easiest strength of schedule in football from 2018. What stood out to you?
Yeah, I think the three division games to start, the three division games to end, what a chance to really get out and establish a good position for yourself, and you also have a chance to close any potential gap. But that also means on the flip side, you have a chance to build a massive hole that you're going to have to dig out of, or you have the potential end of Jay Gruden in the hottest flames that you could possibly think of losing multiple division games to end the season and missing out on the playoffs. So there's great opportunity. The way I termed it in our piece for the website is that there's the opportunity for the spectacular, just whether it's going to be spectacularly good or spectacularly bad. That is the question we won't know until a lot of months from now.
Craig, the NFL is in the business of making money. And one of the ways they do that is through putting forth what they believe is the best television product possible. And their partners assist with that. I don't think I've said anything controversial so far. So when the league tells you, yeah, you're not that special, and they only give you two primetime games, one's the mandated Thursday night that everyone has to go through, so really one primetime game as opposed to three, four, five, etc., they don't think you're much of a spectacle. The Redskins have behaved the last few years like they're pretty good. Somebody's right and somebody's wrong here. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's a difference between being a spectacle and being entertaining and being good. I think even when they had Alex Smith and thought that they were going to be good, they never would have considered themselves a spectacle. They kind of like, at this point, flying under the radar, not being as glitzy. They want this persona of this hard-nosed team that wins with defense and running game. And, like, sure, they can be that, but also in part because they don't have a quarterback that inspires a whole lot of confidence. And I think that's ultimately what the league is saying. Like, what are we going to do? Put Colt McCoy and Case Keenum on primetime special? Nobody's going to watch that. So ultimately, like, if they're good late in the year and good sells, then even if they're not that exciting and they're involved in some key game, they'll get flexed to a 4 o'clock or maybe even a Sunday night football spot. If it's, you know, very late in the season when they can move the 1 o'clock games even down to Sunday night football. But I think really what they're saying is, like, we don't expect this team to be either good or exciting. And thus, you have 14 1 o'clock starts on the schedule. Although, with the way they've played in prime time the last couple of years, I don't think they're going to really complain that much about that.
Craig, number 15, Redskins on the clock. They get their way. What happens?
Oh, man. I think one of the premier type of players falls, a Montez Sweat, someone like that, at a position of need. And obviously, they have enough positions of need that could be multiple guys. There's T.J. Hockenson, tight end from Iowa, Montez Sweat, defensive end from Mississippi State. I think one of those two guys, probably the best players that could reasonably fall to them. Or I guess the other one would be a middle linebacker, Devin White, out of LSU. If he's there, I think they run to the podium and take him, a guy who could truly change the upside level and the fortunes of their defense for years and years to come.
Craig, always appreciate it, dude. Enjoy the Caps game tonight, a week away from the draft. Thank you, buddy.
You got it. See you guys.
See you, my friend.
That there is your Beltway Blitz.
That's how we do it.
Your chance at those tickets to the draft party. We were just talking about that 15th pick. You can be at the party when the pick is announced and maybe even find out a moment or two before everyone else what the Redskins are going to do if you are at the Anthem. We'll give those tickets away next. Plus, we'll get you ready for the Nats and the Giants. And we've got to take one last look at the Caps lines and prep for the Canes as they try to take a 3-1 series lead in Carolina. Grant and Danny welcoming you back to Nats Park, where we are broadcasting live today ahead of the Nationals and the Giants. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Get you the lineups for the ballgame in just a couple of moments. Do want right now, though, to give away that chance for you to take part in the Redskins draft party. So, let's ask this question. Last year, Daron Payne was the Redskins pick in the first round.
Yes.
In the second round, they took a running back who didn't get a carry in the regular season, Darius Geis, because he got hurt after a banner career at LSU.
Yeah.
A lot of excitement about him this year. Who was the Redskins pick in the third round? If you know the answer to that, you can be caller 10 right now at 800-636-1067. You'll win a pair of general admission tickets to the draft party April 25th at the Anthem. Watch the Skins make their first round selection. Listen to live commentary from players and alumni and more. Courtesy of the Redskins. Details at thefandc.com/contest. We're only a week away from the draft. People that have listened to this show for a while know that you and I absolutely love the NFL draft. I still advocate for it, and nobody cares about this, but whenever it comes up, going back to the all-day Saturday first, I think it was first three rounds on Saturday.
It'll never come back.
4-7 on Sunday. It's not going to happen because there's money to be made, and it's a primetime event. And I just saw yesterday that ABC is televising some type of draft special where they're going to have like some country singer who's on some TV show, Luke Bryan, do something, and some contestant from The Voice is going to be involved on stage. I need less of that. I want more Mel Kiper or Todd McShay, or now it's no longer Mike Mayock, it's Daniel Jeremiah. I just want experts talking about college football prospects for 5 hours all weekend long. But this is where we are. One round on Thursday, two rounds on Friday, and then we wrap it up on Saturday.
It's a great way to distinguish what kind of sports fan you are. If you're the kind of guy that gravitates towards Stephen A. Smith shouting at you and a baby pool level of depth of opinion, where he may have seen one quarter of one game at one point this year, and he'll tell you about a guy that's not actually hasn't played in months, or that Tressway's a quarterback, that kind of stuff. If you like that, the draft is not for you. If you're somebody like me that wants all of the information, the draft is the greatest informational session there is about who's coming into whatever league it is, right? In baseball, it's really tough because you see a guy get picked and then maybe 3, sometimes 4, sometimes 5 years later, he makes his debut and you've already kind of forgotten about it, right? But for basketball, for football, these guys are coming right away. They are here to change their teams. And everybody, you get so in-depth that it's a day for experts. It's not a day for hot takers. It's not a day for the shouters. It's not a day for Max Kellerman to go, where's my camera? Shh, not your time. This is the time for people that study this 24/7, 365, that come up, that talk to scouts, that put together in-depth reports and information. I don't know who's right, but it is a lovely day of information. It's my favorite, but we're never seeing the one-day extravaganza ever again. You're right, there's too much to be made. I need fewer concerts. I need fewer discussions of how people are dressed. I need fewer weird things that have nothing to do. Prospects all the time, nothing but information.
I've got a trivia question for you that you shouldn't know the answer to, so I don't want you to feel any shame if you don't know it.
All right.
But it's something I stumbled across during some of my draft prep last night. What college do you think the Redskins have drafted the most players from since the draft really comes into play back in 1936?
The joke, of course, would be Alabama because of the late push. Right? Because of all the skull that they got in the last several years.
They drafted 20 players from Alabama, good for fourth on the all-time
top five
list in the annals.
I'll say Maryland, because of how things used to be. Teams were close, so they would just pick guys.
I would not have guessed Maryland. Maryland is actually high on the list. There have been 18 Terrapins. They are ranked number sixth, tied for sixth with Tennessee.
All right. So then Tennessee, I cheated there. Let me think. How about Texas?
Texas is a good guess.
Team of the kind of the old school team of the South is what the Redskins wanted to be for a while before there were teams below them.
Texas A&M has actually had more players chosen, believe it or not, than Texas has all time for the Redskins. So Texas is not near the top of the board.
Two more guesses here. UCLA.
UCLA is not what I'm looking for, Danny.
Damn.
Absolutely not. Now, UCLA, early on, more so than late, obviously, did have plenty of Redskins. But 15 Longhorns as far as UCLA goes. I'll get you the exact number here in a second. But no, not in the top five.
Then my last guess will be Michigan.
Not Michigan. Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. I should have done
the
that.
Answer. 14 players from UCLA. 33 players from Notre Dame.
How about that?
I got to imagine that's a lot of heavy lifting early on back when like everyone came from Notre Dame.
Newt Rockne giving fired up speeches
exactly.
on grainy film.
29 from Southern Cal, 21 from Penn State, 20 from Alabama.
I should have guessed Penn State.
And 19 from Nebraska. I believe all but one in the same year when Niles Paul.
Yes.
And Dejon Gomes. And there was a third
player
that
year. There was a lineman that year, yes, from Nebraska? Or am I
no,
crazy?
No, it was Niles Paul, Dejon Gomes. I'm going to pull it. And
Roy Helu. Damn it. Oh, I can't believe it. See, I would have lost to the Jeopardy guy who had already buzzed in.
Yes, he would have buzzed in a while ago. But that is your history in terms of schools. Last year, the Redskins had a great draft, though. Daron Payne, I think right now you could comfortably say that guy's probably going to play in a Pro Bowl, right?
Yes.
I think if you had to guess, binary yes or no, will he be a Pro Bowler? You say yes.
Yeah.
Darius Geis, we've seen nothing from other than one great preseason run, then he got hurt. So everyone's counting chickens before they hatch. But there's no reason to believe he's not going to be an impact player for them
in
the second round. The pick that they really missed on was Jerron Christian.
Well, rounds 3 and 4 to me are just balloons with the air getting let out.
I'm not ready to completely quit on Troy Apke, because if you get a really good special teams player who starts a little bit from time to time in your secondary in the fourth round, you could do a whole lot worse than that. Apke should be able, at the least, to be a very good player on special teams. Actually, I was on Instagram recently, and I saw a video where they said, that time Deion Sanders was amazed that a white guy ran a fast 40. And there's a video, and sure enough, it's Troy Apke, of him running like a 4.31 or a 4.29 or something preposterous. And Deion Sanders is just so blown away. He like goes up and hugs him. That's why the Redskins fell in love with him. The same reason Deion did, because the guy could run really, really fast. But Christian in the third round, the tackle from Louisville. Apke, the safety from Penn State in the fourth round. Those were misses.
But
then after
five through
that,
seven
you
is,
went 4 for 4.
You just start. You give them a slow clap.
And I guess to be determined, right? We don't know what these guys are eventually going to turn out to be. But so far, you either look like you can play or you don't. And Tim Settlett, nose tackle from Virginia Tech, that's an NFL player. Sean Deion Hamilton, linebacker, Alabama, probably going to start for you this year with Reuben Foster by the end of the season. Greg Stroman, the corner from Virginia Tech, started 3 games as a 7th-round pick last year. Picked off a pass, did some really good things, and Mr. Irrelevant, 256th pick of the draft at a Southern Methodist. Trey Quinn, to have not only made the team, that's a win, to have played in games, that's a victory, 9 catches, a touchdown, and after one season, you're slotted in to be a starter at your position.
That's a win.
In the slot at wide receiver, it's why they let Jamison Crowder go get $30 million from the Jets. That's a slam dunk, dude.
Go to years past. 7th-round picks are funny trivia punchlines now. They're the, you know, I don't know. You go back to Robert Davis and Keith Marshall and Austin Ryder and Zach Hocker and Ted Bolzer. These are not NFL players. These are guys that don't play in the NFL anymore. That's what a 7th-rounder usually is. The Redskins got a couple guys that might make the club and might contribute. And even if you say, well, they're making the Redskins, they're not making a good team. Uh-uh. To be able to stick in the league for more than 5 seconds in some training camp somewhere, that's a big deal. So you're right. 5 through 7, they were great. 1, I think, very solid. 2, TBD, although the arrow's looking up, right? There's some sunshine for guys. I think we're going to say, damn, I wish they'd gone somewhere different as rounds 3 and 4. But your point's taken. Overall, if I could have every draft be like 2018, binary yes or no, I'm taking it.
Yeah, that's a net win. You're just not going to hit on every pick. When you hit on the majority of them and when you do that well after the 5th or so round, you got a chance to win some football games. Let's get to the Capitals as we barrel down the stretch here on Grant and Danny. This is an abbreviated show today. Charlie and Dave come by in about 8 minutes. They will take over with Nationals pregame, and the first pitch of Nats Giants can be heard in our time slot at 105 right here on the Fan. Every pitch, every homer all season long on your flagship home for the Nats. But as far as the Caps go, their game will be broadcast live tonight at 7 o'clock from Raleigh as they're trying to rally and get to 3-1 in this best-of-7 series. Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie, now your top line. Oshie has been moved up. Wilson has been moved down. So the top six has been altered now twice through 3 games. Remember, Carl Hagelin actually started on the second line. Jacob Verana, who's been playing on the second line all year, was moved down to the third line. He was moved up in game three of the series, so it was he and Kuznetsov with Oshie. Now Oshie with Backstrom and Ovechkin, Verana, Kuznetsov, and Wilson. Todd Reirden doing some tinkering. I actually love getting Ovi, Backstrom, and Oshie together. When the Caps have had any problems over the last couple of years, that was their quick fix. That was their, you know, spray this on it and it'll go away kind of scenario. And that's the plan for Reirden, to try to stockpile some points with those three guys together.
That's a great way to put it. That's the security blanket, right? That's the in case of emergency, you break glass. For Randy Whitman, it was to play Nene with Marcin Gortat. That's not a great in case of emergency. That's a lane-clogging, offensive, slow-down, slow-footed, defensive bewilderment.
But at least both teams won't get any possessions whatsoever.
That's kind of the idea, right? But for the NHL, for the Capitals, a much better team than the Wizards, obviously, over the years, that is kind of the nice thing to go. You know, it's McDonald's is McRib, right? Like, we're going to it. It's time. It's been 9 months. Let's go back to the McRib. This is their McRib. You're hoping it jump-starts all those guys. But to me, again, this is about finding a way to get Jacob Vrana going. And maybe you think Tom Wilson gets some extra possession or get something deep and you can take advantage. You've got to find a way to get some secondary scoring in this series, because that's where I still think the Capitals are better as you go down the roster. They're better at the top, too. I mean, OV and Kuznetsov and Backstrom are better than almost anybody that Carolina has.
Yeah, Sebastian Aho would fit in well in the Caps top six. And I believe that Teuvo Teravainen would probably look really good in a Cap sweater on that second line.
And I'd love
well.
To have Jordan Staal. But, I mean, that's, you could do that with every team.
Yeah.
But to me, when you start really comparing, I think the Caps should have a huge advantage on kind of the down roster players that hasn't been exposed yet.
Well, that gets us to the bottom six, where Andrei Burakovsky's up from the fourth line. I'm always a proponent of playing him on the third line. I think that when you put a guy with the skill that Burakovsky has on the bottom line, generally they get slowed down by skaters without speed. A lot of times your grinders and your gritty types that lack a little bit of skill, will over skill hockey players are on that fourth line. And it's no disrespect to a Travis Boyd or a Nick Dowd or, you know, a Devontae Smith-Pelly.
They're different players.
But you can't get up and down the ice with Andrei Burakovsky, and he can't dangle and do some of the things he wants to do, tic-tac-toe passing and look pretty, getting through the neutral zone with those players. So he's got to play a game that maybe doesn't fit him as well. You put him back on a line that he spent more time with than any other. Lars Eller centering he and Brett Connolly. I think you get more out of him. He's got just one shot through two games. He had two goals against the Tampa Bay Lightning in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final last year. If the Caps are going to go anywhere this postseason, they need him to play well. And the new-look fourth line has a chance, I think, to help this team, because you're going to have the speed of Carl Hagelin as a worker who can win pucks. And Dowd and Boyd together have made some sweet music this year. Those guys, for whatever reason, around the net seem to be in sync and do a lot of the little things in the crease and in the high-danger areas to get shots toward goaltenders. So I like throwing them back together. They spent a lot of time together this regular season. The key to the game is obviously going to be the defensive performance. Jonas Siegenthaler is in for the now-benched Christian Juice.
Had to happen, right? We all agree?
To me, that was the biggest no-brainer of all the changes Reirden made. All right, let's get finally to the Nationals and the Giants. Winner of today's game wins a series. It's important to win these series early this season, to get two out of each three. The Nats can do that against a team, frankly, they should take a series from. It'd be a bad look at home in consecutive series to drop two of three to the Pirates, who you're competing with in the National League, potentially for a wild card spot, and then from San Francisco, who's probably not even playoff bound this year. I think that the Nationals have to find a way, with Patrick Corbin on the hill today, to get this win. He's going to go out and give you six decent innings. He's going to keep you in the game. You better score some runs and get yourself into the win column so that you can continue to stay within a couple games of the teams at the top of the division.
Right-handed dominant lineup today for the Nats against the lefty Drew Pomerantz, a guy that most of the players haven't faced too often, just through circumstance. Pomerantz has not gone deep into games. Just that is a guy that's always been known with pretty good stuff, but, you know, just, again, hasn't been terribly reliable to this point this year. Michael Taylor's got some nice history with him. Had a 3-for-3 game with two homers and another base hit in that game a couple years ago. But your batting order Adam Eaton is off today. Victor Robles starting in right field. Anthony Rendon hitting second. That worked pretty well, seems like last night. Third base, Juan Soto, only lefty regular in the lineup in left field. Ryan Zimmerman at first. Yan Gomes batting fifth at catcher. Brian Dozier batting sixth at second. Wilmer Defoe, shortstop, switch hitter. Patrick Corbin hitting eighth on the mound. And in center, Michael A. Taylor gets the start today.
I like getting Michael A. Taylor, one of those rare starts in center field. Defense first. In the outfield with Robles, who can be a really phenomenal defender and right. You saw his throw to third base and the great tag from Anthony Rendon yesterday. I don't love sitting guys when they're red hot, though. I'd rather wait. Guys are going to be cold over the course of a season and in baseball where you fail 70% of the time and you're still successful. I don't like sitting guys when they're rolling like Adam Eaton is. Matt Adams is not in the lineup today. He's homered in two straight, although you're facing a left-hander to your point, so Zimmerman makes some sense there. I can live with that. I'd like to see Kendrick getting more ops than Brian Dozier at this point, who's hitting just 170. But I will say Dozier's putting better swings on the ball of late. For the Giants, look out for Brandon Belt. He's their cleanup batter. He's the one guy that can really burn you. Four home runs this season. He's already got one in this series. And the catching position today going to be occupied not by Buster Posey, which is good to see because he has, for a long time, been a big-time pain in the butt.
He needs a day off, Buster. Please have a seat.
Hit one off the fence as he tried to end the fourth-longest homer drought in Major League Baseball last night. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler have the pregame show starting in just a couple of minutes as we turn things over to them. First pitch at 1:05. The Caps and the Canes can be heard after the Nats today here on The Fan. That is a 7 o'clock puck drop. If you're at home, check out NBC Sports Washington. I'm on Capitals Face-Off Live tonight at 5:30, 90 minutes before the game. We'll be breaking it down tomorrow. Until then, enjoy Nationals baseball. Charlie and Dave are next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.